Welcome to the 8th edition of the Smuggler's Den. I'm your host, Tiny Grimes, and I'm joined, as always, by my chair-tossing co-host.
That would be me that Tiny is talking about. I'm Ben Tully, and I go by Scarlet Knight on all of the FFG boards.
I think we might have to start calling you Bobby Knight after your antics from last week.
You know what? I have this amazing ability to block out when I do bad things, and I can already barely recall exactly why I threw the chair. I just knew I made a terrible mistake. Oh, that was it. You can't play Force Choke on a droid.
Which we talked about in our last podcast.
Which you did talk about in our last podcast. And yet somehow I still thought I was going to excellently win the game by playing a Force Choke on a droid. And then realizing after the fact that that was not going to happen. And then, yes, there may or may not have been a chair thrown at that point.
And then didn't you win the game anyway?
Yeah, I was going to win the game. I just had to take another whole turn to do it.
Right. So basically you're a sore winner.
Sometimes.
Gotcha. I think all our listeners needed to know that. Okay, so we had our end of the league tournament last week. The league was quite successful. It basically started with Ben, I, and a few Game of Thrones guys that weren't that interested in playing. The league ballooned up to 20, and we had 11 who were able to make it out for the entirety of Wednesday night to play in our tournament.
It was a really nice turnout, I think, that we got a really wide spectrum of the players that we normally get. It tended to be mostly the people who had been coming every week, which was good to see. It was nice to be able to, let them actually hash it out for a competitive prize, which we had lots of for the tournament itself. I think it was, pretty good all around result from just the first 6 weeks of playing the Star Wars game.
Yeah, I think the league was very successful in that we pretty much had one or two people every night saying, oh, wow, I'll be back next week. And sometimes only one would come back next week, but often it would be two, and it seems like it's going to keep going. But I'd like to give a quick shout-out to Game Empire for hosting the tournament and for supplying the league kit for free, not taking it out of the prize fund. And as we've been talking about, Kingdom Con, or as I'll call it, Mini Worlds, for supplying a one-day badge to the winner, who has not yet been determined.
Kingdom Con, which you can find out details about at kingdom-con.com. So we were able to get through three rounds of the initial play. So this was just a single elimination tournament, kind of like a bracket that you're going to be seeing for March Madness coming up for basketball. So we were able to have a number of the higher ranked seeded people in the tournament had a first round brought by, and then other players were playing into then get into the round of eight and then to the round of four into the finals. And so we got through a round of 16, a round of eight, and then we got into the semifinals and completed the semifinals, but we ran out of the time before the store closed. So the finals are actually going to be played this week between John and Brian from our meta.
Yep, so it was an exciting tournament. And Ben, how did you do? I noticed you won your first game against the Bai, so congratulations there.
Well, sometimes Bai can be a really difficult challenger, and so anytime I win against Bai, I feel pretty good about myself.
That's good. How'd you do in your second round?
In my second round, I played one of our meta mates, Gavin. I won both sides of the Force. Actually felt pretty bad in terms of the light side win. I had kind of a dream scenario coming into that where on the first turn I had Han protected. I think in that case I had 3PO on the table with a lightsaber deflection in my hand. So I felt pretty confident playing him. And then by time turn two, he had trust your feelings on it. And so if any of the listeners have had a chance and seeing this combo set up where you have Han with Trust Your Feelings on it, it becomes really brutal because every time he goes into the challenge, he gets to do an extra damage. And then at the same time, he's doing his targeted strike. So by the end of turn three, I had taken out, using pretty much Han by himself, Devastator, Amadi, one Stormtrooper, and then at least two of the different resources that come in character form for the dark side. And so by the time that happened, Gavin said, you know what? You have this in the bag. You're going to win it. And he conceded to me. And I felt really bad because he had played so well in the first game and had come really down to a neck and neck match for my dark side versus his light side. And then to have it end that way, I didn't feel too great about it, though I was, you know, to some degree happy of moving on into the round of Final Four.
So it is interesting if you only get Han out like that. He just devastates their entire force, but it takes him forever to knock out three objectives. So how many objectives did you have down?
So I think by that point, by the time that Gavin was conceding, I was starting to get other things rolling on the board. And so Han had already done maybe, I want to say somewhere between 8 to 10 damage spread across three different objectives at that point. And so at that point, Gavin couldn't get any more cards on the table that were staying that long. And then I was starting to see the rest of the big cards from my set. So I think by the end of it, I had a Luke probably, or Yoda, or some combination of characters that had more blast icons. And so, you know, by that time, he was just like, you know what, you know, good game. I have no problem saying that you won on this one. And you know, he was very gracious about it, but I did feel bad that he felt that he had to concede so early in the game.
Gotcha. And what decks were you running?
So I was running the Han Jedi deck that we had talked about for a long time here on the podcast. And then I was running a version of the Sith deck that included Mahdi and the Devastator in both two copies, the pods that have both of those cards in two copies.
Okay. And then the standard other three pods?
Right. Vader, Emperor, and then the resource pod.
The draw one?
Yeah.
Okay. And then how did your next game go?
So my next game was against John, who is currently in the final, so I think you'll have an idea of how that went.
So you won, but then conceded afterwards?
You know, I'm such a nice guy, and I felt bad. No, that's not what happened at all. John got rolling really quickly, playing a light side deck that was Rebel and Jedi mix. He was able to take the Force from me the first turn using Redemption, and then keep the Force for the remaining turns using Yoda, and then was able to take out all three objectives while the dial was at 4.
Wow, that's not good.
No, it was not good. And so we switched around. He then started up with his dark side deck, and I started with my light side deck.
So let's be clear. When you switched, because of the tournament rules and the fact that it's single elimination, if he got his deck to 5, you lost, right?
Right.
So basically, you had to not only win, you had to win ultra fast.
Which is something that I knew the Jedi Han deck really isn't made to do. I've seen it happen before in a couple of matchups. It normally revolves around getting Luke and trust your feelings and maybe like a Yoda with a lightsaber or two on it. You know, it really requires you to get a really perfect storm worth of objective destroying, reusing cards. And it didn't happen. I saw Yoda with a trust your feelings, which really didn't work in my favor. By the time his dial was at 3, I was really desperate, and I put a trust your feelings on a Yoda that was already committed to the Force. And so everybody might know that that's a terrible idea, because when Yoda strikes, he gets 2 focus tokens on him. So the trust your feelings doesn't do anything in terms of allowing you to strike again. So that was terrible play by my part. But at that point, he played Devastator while the dial was at 3, and then blew up an objective while all my guys were tapped out, and clicked it up an extra 1 using his resources that he had. And so he got to 5 also really quickly with his dark side deck.
Right. And so at that point, did you just concede or did you play it out?
At that point, I conceded. Everybody had already been playing quite a bit at that point, and the games were taking a little while. So, you know, I wanted him, if the opportunity came for him to be able to play in the finals, I didn't want him to be like exhausted from having had to play all the way out, even though he'd already won based on the tiebreakers.
Right. And did you get any break between your two rounds?
I guess I got about a 10-minute break between the two rounds that I played.
Okay.
What about you, Tiny? Tell us about your tournament experience. Who did you play in the rounds of 8 and 4?
Well, as the 1 seed, I wrecked the bye hard in the first round.
Right, because he's such a pushover for the one seed. It's much difficult as this two seed to beat bye.
Yeah, the two seed sometimes loses to the 15. The 16 never beats the one.
Yeah, there you go.
So then the next round, I played Gabe. And there were a couple of people going into this tournament that I was nervous about. And when the brackets were made, Gabe and Brian were both in my bracket, and they were the two people aside from you that I was most worried about. Gabe is an unusual guy in that he's very new to our group, but he came in with the Han Jedi deck and playing it very well. His first time he ever played with us, and so he really is a pretty good player. He's getting good fast. So I played him first, won the coin flip, picked the light side, and we had a really good, hard-fought battle, as the Han Jedi deck often does. He was playing a Sith control deck, so it was basically a mirror match, and I was able to win with a dial at 8. I don't remember any of the details other than it was a slugfest going back and forth. So that meant when we switched sides with me and my Sith deck, I was going to have to get the dial to 9 to win. And so that's pretty tough, except he was playing the Han Jedi deck as well. And so I was able to do some tricks, basically everything I could to slow him down. And in both of those games, neither dark side had the Force very long. So the games took forever. And so it took me something like 7 turns maybe to get the dial to 9. And that's a lot of turns of them drawing Han and Luke and all kinds of guys like that. And so it was a really tough fought match. I was able to win because on the last turn, after playing for, you know, maybe an hour and 10 minutes or something straight, Gabe committed everything to knocking out an objective to try to just get that win. I was able to do some tricks to keep the objective alive. And because he had committed everyone, I still had the Force, and I was at 7, just able to go 8-9 game. Whereas if he had only committed some guys and left that one guy back to take the Force back, it would have been yet another turn, and I was terrified that he was going to win on that turn and that we would have a tie and have to play another game, because most likely that's what would have happened had he not committed everyone to that battle.
It sounds like it took you a while to get to the end of that one.
Yes, it was a very long game. My next opponent, Brian, was basically sitting there and played like 4 games next to me against somebody, just fun games, while waiting for me to finish my 2 games. And so the very moment my game ended, he just kind of sat down and we started. So I got literally 0 break, which was a bit much after playing that long and hunched over. It's a good idea to stand up, walk around for 2 or 3 minutes just to get the blood flowing. That's just a mistake on my part. And when you play a lot of tournaments, you start to learn those kind of things, like always bring a little bit of food just in case that happens. You know, take that minute to stand up and walk around. I had a lot of adrenaline going, and so sort of, you know, forgot at that moment that I should do that. And so just started right up against Brian. Like I said, Brian is a very good player. I was definitely not thrilled when I saw he was on my side of the bracket. So we played in the final 4.
So you were saying, so you clicked your dial up to 9 playing Gabe.
Yes.
Did then you guys end the game there? You conceded at that point?
Yep.
And yeah, so reasoning behind conceded. That being, and your reasoning behind that was similar to the reasoning behind mine, I'm assuming.
Yes. I mean, basically once it gets to that point in single elimination, there's no reason to play out the game. The games aren't timed, so you can't get that timed draw. It's just simply, you have lost now, period. That's it. End of story.
Right, because even if he won outright, destroyed 3 objectives, you won with your light side, he won with his light side, and it comes to the tie, and the tie is based on the dial.
Right, and so even though technically I won 2-0, I did not. He won that game. He was going to win the next turn. And so it's one of those 1-1 splits where he lost based on the tie-breaking system.
Gotcha. And in that case, though, in a real tournament, though, that case, you wouldn't get all 5 points for a double win. You would get 3 points, and he would get two.
Yes, if he didn't concede. The problem is the game was so long, almost certainly that game would have just gone to time. I would have ended up with 3 points. He would have ended up with one. And we'll talk about that
later. Yeah, I was going to say, let's talk about, let's have you talk about your top four matchup against Brian, and then we'll talk about what we took away from how the tournament played out and what we think
about
that.
Sounds good. So my first game against Brian was a crazy game of us drawing things when we needed it. And so the game started with him getting a Cruel Interrogations immediately and just getting to go in and pull my best card. Next turn, Cruel Interrogations, go in, pull my next card. The next turn, drop Vader. And it just got to that point where it looked like I was dead, dead, dead. You know, I was dropping random little chuds. He would just force choke him and then kill the other one with Vader, bumping that dial up pretty quick. And I was definitely worried. And then he had a turn where he maxed out. You know, it's basically the Han Jedi deck has tricks. So while you're waiting for your good cards, you don't usually get blown out. That's why the games take so long. But that's why the deck is so good. So while he's crushing me, I'm still doing enough trickery to keep myself in the game, keep the dial at a reasonable spot. Finally, I draw, say, one Uber character, since I'm running eight of them. Get one down that he can't kill instantly. And then the next turn, he puts out Palpatine, maxing all his resources out to do it. I mind trick Palpatine. I mind trick Vader when I have the Force. So it's two on each of them. And then I'm able to use stuff like Han and Obi-Wan to just load up the focus tokens on those two guys. And here's a pro tip. If they have a guy like that loaded up, do not kill them with Han. You don't want to give them that opportunity of throwing down a new Palpatine. You would much rather see Palpatine and Vader with a pile of focus on them, knowing they're pointless now, they're not doing anything. Don't kill them. Keep them there, locked down. Kill the other stuff. And so I was able to win that game, but it was in that ugly slug them out, come from behind, stall as the Jedi deck style, and the dial got all the way to, like, it was either 8 or 9. And basically, I knew I had probably lost unless I could pull off a miracle. Though I just had against Gabe, so I thought, maybe, maybe, maybe I can.
And then what happened?
Then we switched sides. He was playing some version of a Jedi deck. First turn, I put out nothing really. First turn, he put out Yoda with some enhancements, blew up an objective. Second turn, I threw down Vader, thankfully drew one of the four Force chokes, killed Yoda, thought, okay, looking at his pods, it looks like it's basically a Yoda deck. I should have this one in hand now. He immediately throws down another Yoda with more enhancements on it. And over like the next three turns, I just basically put everything I could under the deck, threw everything I could into edge battles, tried to draw as many cards as I could to draw that next Force choke, which would essentially win the game because he doesn't have a way to protect him. And I just couldn't draw the Force choke, and Yoda just absolutely wrecked my face and won the game.
That sounds fairly unpleasant.
It was definitely unpleasant, but that's how the game works sometimes, and Brian is an excellent player who really doesn't make many mistakes. I don't think I've seen any mistakes that he's made. So it was a good, hard-fought match. I came away with a bit of a sour taste in my mouth, just with the fact that I split both of my games and then lost, even though I never lost with the light side.
Right, so let me just ask you this. So to clarify, so in your first game against Gabe, you won based on the tiebreaker scenario, where you were able to get your dial higher up and win. Both of you won with the light side. On this,
right.
In this other case against Brian, you lost because of the tiebreaker scenario.
Yep.
He was able to beat you with his light side faster than you could get your dial up. Is that correct?
Yes, that's okay. Correct.
So I think, you know, that's a pretty good summary of the tournament. How do you feel? You're saying it left a sour taste. I want you to continue with that thread and allow us to talk about it a little bit.
What I mean by that is I wasn't that happy with the way the rules are, that in both of those games, basically the light side went 4-0, and then there's another way that determines who wins. And essentially what it boils down to is who has the faster deck. And now with Gabe and I, it was really interesting because we had mirror matchups. We both had slow decks. So it was actually a very interesting tiebreaker where we both knew, okay, 8 is about where the Han Jedi deck normally wins against Sith. So both of us knew we were probably going to lose that matchup, but stalling and doing everything to stall the dial, whereas Brian had a much faster deck, and there really wasn't anything I could do to stall the dial. It was just simply like, if he's going to win, he's going to win quick, or I'm going to kill that Yoda, and he's probably going to lose. And so it was an interesting matchup, but I'm not sure how much I like the setup that basically if you have a faster deck that wins, that's the deck you should be using for big tournaments. You know, for league play, for fun play, a slow deck's fine. But for a tournament, you want a faster deck.
So it seems that you're suggesting, and I'm only saying this as a leading question here, is that if you have a deck that wins, let's say you have a deck that wins 80% of the time, but it's a slow deck, and you have a deck that wins 60% of the time, but is a fast deck, you now, having played in a real tournament and seen how the tiebreakers go, you would lean more towards taking the 60% win deck that wins fast?
That's a really hard question.
Or is that too, you know, maybe if it was closer, if it was 70% and wins fast as opposed to 80% and wins slow?
Yeah, that would be more likely. Like, I guess the bottom line is, I think with the new chapter pack, Rebels have caught up a bit to the Jedi.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I will probably move to Rebel, even though I love the control and the tricks element of Jedi, I probably, for regional season, will be looking to build a fast Rebel deck that either wins fast or, even if it loses, will knock out a bunch of objectives so that if the dark side wins, it comes down to who knocked out the most objectives. And if I got 2 down on my way to losing, I have a much better chance of winning.
Right. That's interesting. That's an interesting result, I think. And we mentioned this last time once they had come out, what we thought, how this might play out. And it's interesting to see that it actually did play out in a similar fashion as to, you know, but in practice it was even more of a huge, you know, more of a impact in the way that the tournament played out as opposed to just kind of theory crafting that we were doing on the podcast, being like, oh, it might be an interesting scenario when this happens.
Right. And I think it's even a bigger deal in once you get to the cut, whether you do a Final Four cut or a bracket style tournament like this. I think in the Swiss part, it's not quite as bad because if you win with your Jedi deck and it takes a little while, that's 2 points, period. Then if if time runs out, you draw and you get that extra point. And even if it doesn't, you're still getting 2 points in Swiss, which isn't that bad. So
2 winning, out of a potential 5.
Yes. If you're winning a lot of games, 2-0, you're fine. It's just that when you get into the elimination and you get to the top 4 people, they're all very good players who most likely are going to be splitting 1-1. That's the way I'm viewing this. And maybe I'm wrong, and maybe it will come out that most of these games end up being 2-0, but at least for us, they were pretty much all 1-1 once the top seeded players started playing each other. And then it really does come down to who has the faster deck.
And so, I mean, I feel like now we're walking backwards here. You know, you were talking about how you felt that your timing You know, you played one really long, grueling game against Gabe, and then immediately started your second long set of games against Brian. And I know I had made an effort, you know, having the bye in the first round with you to try and record how long it took the games of the first round. And so what I was seeing, so we had four games playing simultaneously. They actually all finished within about 5 to 10 minutes of each other, and all of the games went to about 75 minutes, 80 minutes. And so if you look at the tournament rules suggested by FFG, they told you rounds are between 60 minutes and 80 minutes, with 70 being the ideal. And I think that actually would be okay, except for if it's a new set of people playing, right? So if this is your first tournament, or you don't have that many competitive players, and or they're new to the game and they're going to be taking a while to make decisions, 80 minutes is probably going to be the better idea for that one. But you end up into this situation where you're playing 80 minutes, and if you're in a major tournament like regionals where they want to get through things quickly, right, you could maybe have a TO who says, well, the rules say 60 minutes, so 60 minutes. And in that case, in Swiss, every one of the second games might be going to time, which means everybody gets a tie, 1 point for that second game of the match. But at the same time, you know, it becomes this really important thing of which match do you play, who wins a coin toss, and who gets to pick the deck that they have a more confidence of winning with, right? We didn't have to see that, but I feel like that might be a problem coming up with the time it takes to play two sides of the force.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, in both of my games, I won the coin toss, and I picked light side knowing I've almost never lost with this deck. Like, in the last 30 games, I think I've lost once with it. And so that I would know exactly where I needed to get the dial to. And if it was in a Swiss, I would definitely pick it, knowing I'd probably win, and then if it goes to time with the dark side deck, you know, that's a slow deck anyway, it's going to go to time if I play a control Jedi deck and then a control Sith deck. There's no way that's going to finish in 60, 70 minutes, so I want to pick the deck I know I can win with first.
We would actually like to know what other people are having with their experience. You know, we want to know if other people have the same concerns. It sounds like our meta is a little different, or potentially very different than other metas out there, where maybe everybody's already playing Rebel decks, so they're already going really quickly. So if anybody has any thoughts, we just kind of wanted to put it out to the community. Post on CardGameDB underneath the podcast section, and we can have a discussion there. Check out our Facebook group, which is the Smuggler's Den Facebook group. Or if you don't want to make it a big announcement, maybe you have like actual full-scale results from your local tournament, you could also feel free to send it to us at smugglersdenpodcast@gmail.com.
So that was our tournament. Good luck to Brian and John. I hope both of you guys have a good time, and whoever wins gets the championship mat.
Very exciting. Very pretty championship mat.
Yes, I would have to agree with that. Well, I don't know if the rest of you noticed, but Ben and I noticed that a new force pack came out, the Desolation of Hoth.
Yep, and so with this new force pack, it's the first new set of cards that anybody has gotten or seen beyond the spoilers that have come out on the FFG website. Since the core set, it came out with a new objective for both the Rebels and the Jedi, and a new objective for the Sith and the Navy, and then both the Dark Side and the Light Side got a new neutral objective that was limit one per draw deck. So the cards from the force pack add a lot of new cards to decks that were trying to be started. People were making iterations of them already and trying to play out various rebel-centric decks that tried to do damage. You know, we talked about one already on the podcast a couple weeks ago, and the cards that have come out just really seem to add and make some of those decks much more viable.
Yeah, definitely. What would you give the pack as an overall rating out of a thumbs up or thumbs down?
When I first saw the cards of the pack, I was pretty disappointed because I'd actually convinced myself and had been hoping to some degree to see some more Smugglers and Spies and Scum and Villainy, which there aren't any in this force pack. And so at first I was like, oh, I'm kind of disappointed about this. And then I read a couple of the cards and I didn't immediately think about how they would play into decks that are already deck types that are out there. And so even more so, I was kind of like, oh, maybe I'm not really that excited for this force pack to come out. Maybe I'm just going to have to wait for the next one, or potentially even for the next big box set to come out. And then I started to look at the cards and think about what they did. And it made me a little bit more excited. I could definitely see a couple of decks that I want to try. So I would give it a horizontal thumb to almost a thumbs up.
Hmm. Interesting. I give it a thumbs way up. I'm actually really impressed, especially with the fact that it's got a Hoth mechanic that it's built around. I kind of assumed that the first pack would be a bit of a wash and that it wouldn't really be until the second pack when we got more Hoth cards where these cards would be viable. But I feel like already I can see decks where most all of these cards are viable, which I'm pretty impressed with. And I think the rest of them are going to be really strong once there's more Hoth cards available. I actually think every single pod is a strong pod.
It's definitely going to be interesting with the more Hoth cards become viable, because right now it's one of those things where even if you put all of the available objectives, Hoth objectives into your deck, right now you're only looking at 3 out of 10. And so with those kind of odds, it's whoever gets that one copy of a Hoth objective onto the table is really the one who's going to get the most benefit from it. But in the future, when you can start loading up Hoth objectives, and maybe 5 of your objectives have Hoth objectives, and all 3 on your table might be, you're really going to have these games where, like, I really need to take out my opponent's Hoth objective. You know, I hope there another one doesn't come in, because otherwise my abilities that I'm counting on don't come into play.
Yeah, speaking of that, let's look at some specific objectives, and I want to look at the one that I think is the most reliant on having more Hoth objectives, and that's the light side neutral one, Echo Base Defense, which says, while you control more Hoth objectives than your opponent, your Hoth objectives cannot suffer unopposed damage. So first of all, just by having lots of, if you had, say, a deck of 7 Hoth objectives, you should be able to probably have 3 of them out first turn. We'll say you have 8 in the deck. So you're going to have all 3 Hoth objectives. If you have this out, they cannot suffer unopposed damage. Then you also have Sub-Zero Defenses out, which in an all-Hoth deck is absolutely amazing. One cost enhancement, which says, destroy the first enemy unit to strike against a friendly Hoth objective each turn after its strike resolves. That is really, really strong. At first, it might not sound that strong. Like, okay, I'll attack with an Espo Trooper and the Devastator. I'll just strike first with the Espo Trooper, then the Devastator. But what problem do you see with that, Ben, in having your order of striking dictated for you?
Well, there's a lot of issues that come into play if you're playing against a light side deck, where they have the ability to put focus or on your guy. So, if the light side has on defense and they win the edge battle and they have somebody with a tactics icon and they tactics your Espo Trooper, what are you stuck doing? You're stuck striking with the Devastator in that situation, and it'll be the first one to strike the objective, which means it'll be destroyed.
Yeah. And then even if you win it and you think, okay, well, I'll just attack with the Espo Trooper, do no damage to the objective, then he dies, then they can just focus the Devastator and you don't get any damage off anyway.
Right.
So I think it's going to be a really, really powerful card once you can run almost all Hoth objectives. Until then, I think it's almost a completely useless card because they would just never attack Hoth objectives. This pod is not very strong otherwise. You have 3 copies of the Wilderness Fighter, who's an outrageous 3 cost. He only has 1 force icon for dumping. And he has this unit gains a unit damage for each Hoth objective you control. So if you don't control any, he's basically a 2 edge dependent blast damage guy for 3, which is pretty darn terrible. He does have 2 health capacity, but that's still not a well-costed card unless you have tons of Hoth objectives. If you have 3 Hoth objectives out, he's a pretty decent defender. He's not great, but Sub-Zero Defenses is so good that it offsets the Wilderness Fighter.
I'm actually going to have to disagree with you a little bit here, Tiny. I've already been thinking about how the decks my decks are going to change for Wednesday and being able to play them this week. And I'm already really excited about having even just the three Hoth objectives in the light side deck because, and this is, you know, it has less to do. It's one of those things where the deck that I'm trying to fit him into is the one that we were discussing last week, the Rebel deck that I have, where the lack of characters, right, causes this kind of imbalance in synergy, right? We talked about you can't use Trust Your Feelings, you can't use all these cards on it. So my idea has been to include these guys, maybe potentially even removing the Luke Pod from it and having them in there. And it solves a couple of issues. One, you have more characters that allows them to be more viable with those synergistic cards that you need. In this case, it would only be Double Strike remaining. But could you imagine if, you know, you use this Wilderness Fighter as a lone attacker against one of your opponent's objectives, and they have to make a decision between stopping and defending to get to make keep you from getting an easy edge set of icons, and then you play Double Strike, and you take out a single objective by using just one character.
Yeah, I mean, that is good. If it wasn't three cost, I would like him more. I'm really excited to see that you're going to use him, and I'm looking forward to seeing it in action. And I may change my mind, because let me take a step back and say this. There has not been an Octagon file created yet, so I've had done zero testing, so everything I'm saying is just me thinking out loud, so I could be wrong on everything. But the way I'm looking at it is that without enough Hoth objectives, I just see these guys as too expensive for what you get. Like, for instance, a Darth Vader Force Choke just instantly kills them, and they are most of what you paid that round if you paid three to put them out.
That depends on what point of the game it's on. I don't know if I would play these guys first round. I think you're right in that. Like, oh, I got these in my hand. Let me play most of my resources on the first round. But as we were discussing last week, there's a lot of resources in that Rebel deck that I was running. These guys also synergize really nicely if you run two copies of the other light side Hoth objective, the Hoth operations for the Rebels, with Hoth survival gear, giving them extra health capacity. You know, you already have three Hoth objectives that you're running. So even if you have two of them out, you know, they have two character damage icons that are make them more viable for their cost. It's one of those things that scale. I think you're right that they will get better. I just don't think that they're terrible right now. Like,
okay.
You
do. I guess when I say terrible, I don't mean in a vacuum terrible. I mean compared to the other choices.
Sure.
Because we now have, like you said, with this new pod that we're going to now talk about, I have a Rebel deck that I've built that looks really strong. Like, it looks like it's going to win fast. It could easily lose fast because that's how Rebels are, but it's going to be a real fast deck.
Okay, so you're now talking about the other objective that I was referencing. So that's Hoth Operations, which is a Rebel deck, or Rebel objective, and it has some pretty awesome cards in its pod. So the actual objective itself is actually really good in and of itself. It's if you control more Hoth objectives than your opponent, each of your speeder units gain edge one. We haven't had a lot of cards with this ability yet in the game. The only one that I can think of off the top of my head is Mon Mothma. Not that I've ever really spent a lot of time attacking with Mon Mothma. I have been in situations as a defender where it goes from this really easy decision of, oh, well, I'll defend and I'm already automatically winning the edge battle, to I have to already put in at least one focus token or focus icon on a card to win. And they're probably putting more than that into play if they're attacking with Mon Mothma. And now you have that with all of your speeders, which is what comes in the rest of the pod. You have two speeders. One of them is a unique speeder, so you can only have one copy on the table at a time. And one of them is a non-unique speeder, so you can have two copies on the table. So that's three speeders, each one with edge one at, you know, possible if you have more Hoth objectives in this scenario.
Yeah, just imagine when you can have a deck full of speeders. This objective is going to be just insane.
So many speeders everywhere.
And I guess I have a question. I'm assuming edge one stacks. So if you have three speeders in a battle, they are in big trouble.
Edge does stack, and yes, it would be looking at you already. If you have three speeders in the battle, you already have three edge icons up on your opponent.
All right, so let's start with the obvious, amazing card that is Rogue 3. I feel like Rogue 3 gives Rebels what they were looking for. Another big character. It's not a character, but another big unit. They had Home One. They had Red Five, if you want to splash in the Jedi. But they were lacking that third big unit, and I feel like Rogue Three really fills that role.
It's a really, I mean, in terms of what you could have as kind of other cards that would feel a similar role, Red Two, which is less health capacity and doesn't have as many non-edge dependent blast icons. Rogue Three has the, if you have enhancements, it gains icons, just like Yoda. We all know how good Yoda is, but this is a Yoda that has three health capacity and does more objective damage than regular Yoda does.
And also, back up for a second, it's way better than Yoda because Yoda's bonus icons are edge dependent. His are not. You put an enhancement on it, it gets a unit damage and a blaster damage. And as we saw, we get Wedge Antilles, who can you put, you could put on him. And we already have Astromech Droid upgrade, which makes it so an enhanced unit gains a blast unit and a unit damage. So basically, just putting an Astromech Droid on Wedge 3 gives him four blast icons and two unit icons. That is pretty darn good.
Right. And then with, if like you were saying, you can get the Wedge Antilles character enhancement on there, you can now take off that focus token in the same way that Trust Your Feelings works for characters and get to strike again with that card.
Yeah, so essentially what happens is if they tap everything out, you can drop Rogue 3, both of those enhancements on it, and destroy two objectives just by himself.
Right, and that's only costing you six resources.
Yeah, that is really, really strong.
And it will be a really big game changer in terms of an ability that Rebels have to come fighting back real hard when they may have looked like they were down, which I think is pretty appropriate considering the canon that we're working from.
I agree. I actually feel like this pod is an absolute meta shifter. I feel like the Jedi are still good, but I just did not think Rebels were viable before, and now I really think they are.
I would agree. I'm pretty excited. I'm really happy that we talked about the Rebel deck that I had before this came out last time on the podcast. So now when I have a deck that's almost exactly the same but with these in there, you know, it seems like I actually knew what I was talking about in terms of trying to structure a Rebel deck that was viable in the first place.
Yep, indeed. What's interesting about the pack, I think, is that it throws Hoth survival gear in, which is amazing in a vacuum. Zero cost, two force icons enhancement, but it enhances a character card, and the enhanced unit gets plus one damage capacity for each Hoth objective you control. So my point is this. When I first saw this card, I was like, oh, this fixes the Yoda problem. You can run this with Yoda, and he'll get more health. But it doesn't. Because in order to do that, you have to splash a bunch of Hoth objectives so that you know you'll have one or two on the table to make this worth it, which basically messes up the entire synergy of a Jedi character deck. So it's really only going to be good, it seems like, on characters like Akbar or Leia, or there may be some other specific Hoth character coming that it would work with. But it just seems like it's a weird card synergistically to have in a Rebel deck.
Well, we don't know because future Jedi objectives may have the Hoth trait. And so then you could play some type of Hoth-Jedi hybrid like we see out there where it's basically centered around Yoda, but you have these other Hoth objectives. And so then maybe you have speeders with Yoda who can then have the Hoth survival gear. I mean, I don't think we know for sure definitely which way it's going to go yet.
Oh, I totally agree. But I just mean right now.
Right now, yes,
it's a
definitely
very strange card, especially with Wedge Antilles. So it's like you get a speeder or fighter enhancement and a character enhancement in the same pod that seems to be a speeder pod. And it just feels like a weird fit in that pod.
It seems like the way that FFG has planned out this game from the beginning about balancing great pods with kind of cards that slow you down.
Yeah. And then it has what I think is really key, a target of opportunity. I'm not going to talk about the Rebel deck that I built yet just because I have no idea if it's any good. I don't want people building it and going, oh, that looks great. But I will tell you this. It's built around big dudes with tons of blast icons, and it has 7 targets of opportunity in it. It feels like a rebel deck with 7 targets of opportunity means you can throw anything into a battle and do a bunch of damage to an objective.
It's a lot. That's a lot. When the game first came out, I had real serious thoughts about get decks that just had all of the fate cards in it and just kind of hoping they worked really well together. I haven't done that. I've convinced myself not to. But there was definitely a period of time where I thought, you know, having as many copies of Twist of Fate and as many copies of Heat of Battle and as many copies of Target or Opportunity would actually not be a terrible thing to have.
Yeah, and I didn't do it intentionally at first. It was one of those things where I'm just building all the good pods and I'm like, oh, wow, they all have Target of Opportunity. That's pretty phenomenal. Because I just made it a deck where there were tons of blast icons, because if you want to win and win fast, that's the way to win fast.
Right.
The one problem I see with this kind of deck, and this is probably because I'm so used to the Jedi deck, is that there's no real way to keep these characters alive. If you're playing a shield card, you can put 1 shield on it, but that's still not that much. It just scares me to have a Rogue 3 with only 3 health and some enhancements on it, knowing there's a good chance that card is going to die.
Right. But that's always been a situation that the light side has to deal with.
But your card of the week last week, the Repair Droid, makes me feel a little bit better about that.
I told you how good of a card that was.
Yep, you sure did. And he's in Home One's pod, so... essentially, I'm really excited for Rebels. How about you, Ben? Are you going to play a Rebel deck this week?
Oh, there's definitely a Rebel deck coming this week.
Yeah, I agree. Rebels right. are going to be played this week. One of the pods that I was initially disappointed with, but I've now come around on quite a bit, is the Jedi pod, A Message from Beyond, which has a very interesting text that after you refresh, damage its objective to return the topmost enhancement from your discard pile to your hand. And I'm seeing this with the protectors and using their pod, which redirects the attack so that this Jedi pod will not be dying. And so you're essentially going to be able to just keep returning that enhancement to your hand. So if nothing else, you can keep bringing back that trust your feelings. So you can just throw that down on a character you might be hesitant to put it on before, knowing that's going to come right back. So I'm thinking that this pod, I originally thought it was not going to be used, and I'm thinking I'm probably going to find a room for it in all of my decks now.
All of your decks?
All of my Jedi decks, I mean.
Wow. Okay. I only see this really as a pod that I would use in terms of trying to make an uber character deck. So that's a term that kind of gets thrown around in the Game of Thrones community. But I can see this being a really key card in a deck where you're trying to get Yoda or Luke and maybe even Han, get them really pumped up and then abuse the board with them. And so things like Old Ben Spirit helps you keep those characters on the table. And then you have these other, you know, especially for Yoda, you have these... you know, the event in it that allows you calm, right, which allows you to remove all your focus tokens when they have 2 or more enhancements. It just seems to be screaming, like, make a deck, get enhancements on characters, try and keep them alive, and just wreck face as much as you can.
Yeah, I really think Old Ben's Spirit is going to be critical, because things like Force Lightning aren't as frightening. You can just go, okay, no problem, I'll discard Old Ben's Spirit, remove the 1 damage that was on him, he stays alive. Next turn, I just go get Old Ben Spirit again.
Right.
And then they say, oh, well, I'm going to drop Palpatine and put, you know, 3 focus tokens on your Han. He is just done. And then you start your turn, or as soon as they do that, you go, oh, I'll play Calm. Now you're screwed again.
Right. Right. Yeah. No, it's a great, has a lot of synergy in it for that type of deck.
Yeah. So I'm really excited about that pod. One pod that thus far I'm not that excited about is the Neutral Dark Side pod. How about you, Ben?
The Neutral Dark Side pod would be the one that I'm least excited about. And so this is why I think currently the Light Side Hoth deck is more suited, and probably we'll see a little bump until another Force pack comes out. And that's because I only see really two viable Darkseid Hoth pods. While the Hoth pod, the neutral one, you know, you have the Wampa, which can get cheaper, but otherwise it's kind of an only just an okay card. Succumb to Cold, which is a nice kind of little control, but you have to have at least one Hoth objective out. And then you have the new Hoth Fate card, which has three Fate icons, Edge icons, but it really only kind of supports, you know, this Hoth and Hoth battle, which we might not be seeing too much of really early in this release of Force packs.
Yeah, I'm actually seeing Succumb to the Cold as probably an auto-include in any deck that runs a lot of Hoth objectives, because this card is flat amazing.
Right.
I mean, it's going to shut down any uber character deck. This goes a large way towards shutting it down. And so that card is going to be phenomenal. But right now, it's just not going to be that good, especially since the Navy pod is not a Hoth pod, which kind of shocked me.
I think that was a good idea, at least on FFG's part, to not have the one side come in on the first Force pack with all the Hoth objectives, right? So if you had five Dark Side Hoth objectives right now and only three for the Light Side, it would really put the Light Side at a disadvantage in that type of matchup.
Yeah, definitely.
So they did it. And so I understand why they did it. I do think it's an interesting choice, but it makes me believe that there'll be a Jedi Hoth pods in the future because there's a Sith Hoth pod already.
Yeah, and that's kind of interesting. I'm just as a looking at it from the movies aspect, it's hard to see a Jedi Hoth pod. But I think you're right. They're going to have to.
It'll be awesome. It's okay, because most of the Sith Hoth pod doesn't actually have any Sith-related characters or stuff. It's events, you know, especially with the images that are depicted, events that happen other points during the Empire Strikes Back movie anyway.
Right. So what do you think about this Navy pod? I look at it and I say 5 stars probably goes in every one of my decks, whether it be Sith or Navy.
It does give Navy a lot of what it needs. It's one of these objectives that are really, it's really balanced. I think in terms of the cards that are in there, you have some amazing cards and not some amazing cards, you know, again, as FFG seems to be trying to do. But when you have it undamaged with the Imperial Vader marching towards objectives, I feel like, you know, your opponent better watch out.
Yeah, I feel like this deck is amazing in the new meta. Like, I imagine you're referring to the probe droids as terrible. I think these guys are amazing. A 2-cost chud.
I think you're misinterpreting. I think the communications officer is terrible.
That's only 1 out of 5 cards.
The probe droids are okay. Let's go ahead and continue your reasoning of why they're so awesome.
Well, the reason why they're great is whenever you're playing a chud, which you're going to play, right? This game is, what, half chuds?
Right.
If you play a chud that when it leaves play, it damages an objective. With the way the tournament rules are, you want to destroy objectives. That's just phenomenal to be able to just go, okay, I'll ping that objective. And there's 2 of them in the pod. So if 4 of the chuds in your deck ping objectives, that's a lot of objective damage you're just pinging out of the blue.
And that's completely the opposite of what I thought you were going to say. I thought you were going to tell me with the new Vader where all chuds become objective damaging units when they're participating with him, that, you know, these are great because they're, you know, they seem unassuming, and then you get into a battle and they can do all this damage that your opponent just wasn't expecting.
Yeah, no, I mean, that is true as well. I mean, you can attack with them, strike, do a damage to the objective, they get killed back, do another damage to the objective. They're just going to be really powerful chuds to just, I'll just throw them in, even by themselves into a battle. You're either doing a damage by unopposed or doing a damage when it gets opposed.
Right, that's true.
But a card that I'm really excited about is Imperial Suppression. And we were talking about this before, that the dark side just didn't have a viable interrupt. They had the one in the terrible neutral pod that's all but unplayable. But here in an amazing pod, we finally get the ability to cancel an interrupt.
Yeah. No.
Sorry, to cancel an event.
It's going to be a really powerful card. It's one of those things where I think FFG has made a really good job of making it a balanced cancel, right? So it's a cancel that puts a card back on, puts the canceled event back on your opponent's deck, right? So that your opponent doesn't lose it permanently, right? In the same way that the way that effect cancels work now, you can still use the Vader damage even if the effect gets canceled. You know, you have these things that FFG seems to have really put some thought into about balancing the game on a level that isn't necessarily obvious, but actually seems more fair than some of the one-sided cards that have been produced historically, something like the Game of Thrones card game.
Yeah. Yeah, I really like that. Some people have said things like, well, that doesn't really do much, but I think it does. I mean, if you want to play something like Rebel Assault, that costs two resources. So you have to use those two resources. You are losing those resources. But more importantly, the way I'm looking at it, is if I want to force lightning something, and my opponent's playing Jedi, there's a decent chance they have a cancel in their hand. And they're just going to cancel my force lightning. And so this allows me to cancel the cancel, get the force lightning off. Sure, they get their cancel back, but you know what? It doesn't matter. The force lightning already went off. I got to do what I wanted to do.
But Tiny, what about the day that comes when the light side is going to have cancels to cancel your cancel to cancel an event?
Well, they already do. They could have two in their hand.
I know, it's crazy. We're going to have cancels that cancel cancels that cancel cancels.
This is true. But the point is, at least you have the illusion of feeling safer.
Right. That sounds good.
And the Vader, of course, is amazing. He's slightly worse than the other Vader in that he loses his non-edge dependent blast icon. He loses his amazing response text where he has a free damage he gets to do. But his new text is really great, that when he's attacking, each of your units gains a blast icon.
Each of your attacking units gain a blast
icon. Sorry, each of your attacking units. So that's going to be really amazing and open up a bunch of decks like trooper decks where you can just play piles of these terrible Espo troopers and just go, Vader and five awful characters, what are you going to do? Are you going to let me blow up an objective every single turn? Or do you have something you can do about that?
I mean, it even stacks even more with something like Orbital Bombardment, which you're already playing in a trooper deck. So now an Navy deck has this ability to have all of these kind of weaker, less obviously good characters on the table, and then give them all extra objective damage that will just kind of, you know, really can do a lot of damage very quickly that your opponent has to be ready for. You can't let your opponent steamroll and get tons and tons of troopers because they only have, you know, edge dependent unit damage, because at some point they're going to all switch over and have objective damage.
Yeah, exactly. And just a note, Vader does not lose his non-edge dependent blast icon because he picks it up when attacking.
One of the amazing things about Vader, and it might speak to how FFG is planning on doing this in the future to make it more difficult to decide which version of a kind of key character it is you're going to play, is that this Vader has the same stats overall as the old Vader. It's 4 for 5 health, and he has the same icons in the same ratio of edge to non-edge, which is just really interesting. I would never have imagined coming into this that the Vaders would be exactly the same except for their text.
Yeah, that is an interesting way to do it. I think what I'm most excited about this Vader is that I can take a Sith deck that right now struggles with getting big characters and just throw a third Vader in there or throw a fourth Vader in there. All the Vaders are awesome. The rest of the pot is awesome. It's worth just throwing into a Sith deck, I think.
Sometimes it seems like that would be a good reason to do it, yeah.
All right. Let's move on to the last pot of the deck.
Killing Cold. Well, so the Killing Cold has one of the cards that I at first was like, this card doesn't seem that good. But it's one of these things where it'll be good the more Hoth objectives you have. But the Desolation of Hoth, which is a 3-cost event, is crazy, crazy good in terms of a Sith event card. So not only is it a Sith event card, you get to trigger Darth Vader, you get to get it back with the Emperor, but it's play during your turn, move any amount of damage from a Hoth objective you control to a target enemy unit or Hoth objective. So you can, I mean, it's amazing. You can have an opponent who's putting all of this effort, I mean, onto destroying objective. Imagine if this had defense upgrade on the objective. So the objective has like 6 damage on it already. Your opponent's like, I'm finally going to take it out. And then you play Desolation of Hoth, remove all of that damage, and then use it to either kill a Hoth objective, which it could be a huge game changer, or you use it to do kill something like Home 1 or any of the big cards that are coming out in the future. I mean, you can't have enough protectors on the board to stop. Well, you can, but you could. You would need a lot of them to have to stop 7 damage going on to one unit.
Yeah, that was the one card in this pack where I was like, wow, that's a card. I mean, in addition to everything else, it has 3 Force icons. And it's just an absolute beast of a card.
Right. And one of the other cards that is really amazing is Fear, which is an enhancement. And so we've actually, as a meta, not us, Tiny or myself specifically, but Brian, got a ruling from Nate that says that with Fear, when you play Fear on your opponent's characters, it actually takes the commitment card off and puts it back into the pool. So you're completely removing a card from the Force Struggle. I mean, Tiny, I know this is, it's a double-edged sword when you play it on Yoda, but if your opponent has been using Yoda exclusively to win the Force from you, or maybe somebody like Obi-Wan who has Elite as well, and you play Fear and you take away its ability to be part of the Force Struggle, and then all of a sudden it can win the Force more easily. I mean, how powerful is that in terms of, you know, card advantage in this game?
Yeah, this is one of those cards that's going to be really great.
And then the last, you know, there's a Twist of Fate in this objective. And then I'm going to admit to this really quickly here. So for the longest time, I was watching the spoilers come up, and I just assumed that everybody was typing Ice Tromper wrong. I thought that somebody had meant to say Ice Trooper.
Same here.
And so I was like, oh, Ice Trooper, cool. It's going to be a, you know, it looks like going to be like a Stormtrooper with like the mask and everything like that. And then when I saw the card, I was like, oh, it's going to be an EU-based creature. Cool. That sounds good, too. That works. That's fine. But it's actually got some pretty good text on it, too. Removing a non-vehicle from an engagement and then doing a damage to that unit, that's actually really, really kind of a really strong effect. And you can have up to 4 of them in your deck.
Yeah, I feel like this pod is going to be really, really strong in a more hardcore Sith control deck. So much so that I'm kind of tempted to build one right now that's not quite like the deck I have, but it's more built on just shutting guys down and controlling them, and it's tons of people with tactics icons, with all these interesting cards that are really based on shutting down your opponent. The problem, of course, is you're setting yourself up for auto losses come tournament time. So it'd be more of a fun league deck, but I think I'll put it together and give it a try and see how it goes.
In terms of all the objectives that we talked about today that had some weaknesses by not having quite enough Hoth objectives yet, I think this one is the most weak right now because it doesn't have enough Hoth objectives. Because the Desolation of Hoth event card only works on a Hoth objective and only can target... It can target any enemy unit, but it can only target a Hoth objective of your opponent's. And so if you're not playing that many Hoth objectives and your opponent's not playing that many Hoth objectives, you know, if the only Hoth objective you have out is the Killing Cold, you know, I'm not going to attack it as light side because I know you can play your Desolation of Hoth. And if I don't ever attack it, it's a dead card in your hand.
Yeah. And the objective has basically no text if it's the only Hoth objective out.
Right.
So it's, you're not going to try to go for it.
Nope, it's true.
And Ice Trompers also are quite a meta card. If everyone starts playing Rebels because they're fast and good, these guys are completely worthless.
Because they have to target a non-vehicle.
Yeah, so if I'm going to rank these out of the just right now, not with what's to come, I think I would rank them number 1, Vader's new pod. No, I'm going to change it. Number 1 is the Rebel pod. Number 2 is Vader's pod. Number 3 is the Jedi pod. And then the other 3 are basically in the, I don't really consider them all that playable yet.
Sure. That's fine. I mean, I like the neutral light side Hoth objective. I think it's going to be pretty good in a deck, and it will only get better. I think it's a little bit better than the neutral dark side deck, and I think it's probably on the same level as the Killing Cold.
All right. Fair enough. So I think next on the agenda is the pod quiz, and I believe I'm up. So I think we should just skip it this week. What do you think, Ben?
No, you're going to get embarrassed. Time to have fun with this. Are you ready for your pod quiz, Tiny?
I am ready.
So I'm going to do what you did to me last time and quote unquote randomly generate a pod that I hopefully know that you definitely won't know off the top of your head. All right. So randomly generated, quote unquote, your objective for this week, for this podcast is number 25.
Let me do some math real quick. 18 is the last light side one. That means we have three sides, so there are seven. So number 25 must be, by my calculation, the first Navy pod. Is that correct?
No, that's wrong.
Okay.
How do you like them apples?
So it is the last Sith pod, which is not good. I can tell you what's in 24 if you'd like.
Nope, I want 25.
25 must be... What are the pods I do not play with Sith? Ah, I know what it must be. The Black Squadron Assault.
No.
Is it Heart of the Empire?
No.
Wow. What other pods don't I play? Are you sure this pod exists?
I'm 100% positive. I'm looking at it right now.
What is the name of this pod?
The name of this pod is Shadows of Dathomir.
Oh, yes. Okay. In that one, we have Secret Informer.
Nope.
Does it have...
this is much better than last time.
I can't remember the name of it. I know the card. I can see the card. I can't think of the name. It's like a... The one where when you commit it to the Force, it does a damage to an objective.
Sure. There's that. The Night Sisters.
Sure, the Night Sisters. And there are two copies of that.
There are two copies of that.
There is one copy of... The Rancor.
Yep.
And he's the reason I've been tempted to play this pod.
Right.
And I believe it also has a Disturbance in the Force.
Yep.
Which is a pretty darn solid card. So there, the pod's not bad. The pod itself is a two-resource pod with no text.
Right. And so what's the last card in there?
Last card is a Fate card. And it is...
It is not a Fate card.
The last card is, I do not know.
It's the Hand's Blessing.
Ah, yes, I knew that.
It's an enhancement for the character. After you refresh, remove all focus tokens from that enhancement.
Yep, and that's kind of tempting if you're going to build a deck around Vader and around Palpatine, and you're worried about Jedi Guardians, you have the Rancor chomping them. It's right. Just that the Night Sisters are really expensive and only have one health each, and they've turned me off of that pod quite a bit.
They are quite the liability in that pod.
All right, Ben. Let's move on to our card of the week. And what card have you selected this week? I can only assume it's a terrible one.
I can only assume it's a terrible one, too. So this week, my card of the week, I'm going to pick something. So I'm going to actually play around a little bit this week with using this card. So I'm going to put a forward plug for it. We've already talked about this card before, way back when at the beginning of the podcast series that we've been doing, because of how much it seemed to be defining the really, really early game version of Star Wars. But I'm going to try her out this week and see how she does. I'm picking Leia Organa for her amazingness at what she is when you can get her working.
Yeah, she's definitely amazing. If you can pull her off, she's great. And if people aren't going to be playing quite as much Sith, I feel like she's really strong. The reason it was always a little bit tough with her was as soon as you put her down, they would just force choke her. And so you never got quite that full usage out of her. Yes, you would get to put out a couple more units than you would have normally, but you wouldn't get to double the emplacement or double strike with some great character. But if Navy kind of starts bumping up and Sith backs off, I think Leia could be a really, really strong card.
Yeah, I'm hoping that that would be the case. I actually really like the objective that she comes into. So my whole idea is to kind of retool the Rebel deck that I used last time and probably take out the Ackbar pods in favor of Leia and her objective, which generates the shields without actually having to put something like Command Center into play. But that's just my idea. I'm hoping it's going to pan out. We'll see how it works this week.
Yeah, it's funny because in my deck, I do not have her currently because I wanted all objective cards. But I really want to use her just for her objective, getting the shield out. I feel like if I can get a shield on Rogue 3, there's a much better chance that vehicle lasts long enough to take advantage of having enhancements and really doing some serious damage, because then I can do tricks where I'm able to remove a damage from it. Whereas if it only has 3 and a car just comes in and kills it, then I'm not going to be able to get as much use out of it.
Yeah, no, that sounds about right.
So my card of the week is Old Ben's Spirit. And we already talked about this a little bit. It's an enhancement. And basically, I really think this card is why the new Jedi Pod is so good. And I might be crazy, but it feels like a meta-defining card. It really feels like it's shifting the meta even more to, if you're going to run Jedi, run some big Jedi, put a bunch of enhancements on them, make it so they can't die. If you run this and the Protector, you have Protectors keeping Han up. You have this. You can put these on Luke. You can basically have that. So once you get those big boppers out, they don't go anywhere. And that's really scary because they're already scary. I often think, oh my, I have to draw into my Force Lightning and hope they don't have a cancel. And if they have Old Ben's Spirit on it, you just look at that card and go, you have got to be kidding me. There's absolutely no way I can kill this unit.
It is going to be a really good card for the game. I think a really good card for Jedi decks. And it doesn't surprise me that you think this is a meta-defining game. Mr. Hyperbolic is being hyperbolic.
I've never been hyperbolic.
He says being hyperbolic.
Yes, exactly. All right. Well, I think that's going to do it for this week. And before we go, I just want to remind people, head over to Facebook, get on our Facebook group. We're up to about 135 people. When the new pack came out, we've been having this lengthy discussion of what a good Rebel deck looks like in the new environment. About 5 people have put up decks. One person put up a deck where they went 3-0 at a tournament this weekend. It's becoming a good resource, not just for talking, but for brainstorming deck ideas, news, all kinds of stuff. Come on over to the Facebook page, and we look forward to seeing you there.
Yeah, it's a much more interactive forum, I think, than the FFG boards. Not only because the FFG boards are slower than molasses, but because you get this like really quick back and forth between people.
So until next time, may the Force be with you.